This is the Nine with Ryan Pinder on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Eric Francis Show is brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. Live horse racing is back on Tuesdays and Sundays. Limited fan access is available, and you can still watch from home. For more info on how to get in on the action, visit hpibet.com.
A major Sunday. We are into the final match day of qualifying at Euro. No, not the final day of it, but today will be the final day for groups B and C. Tomorrow, D, then E and F. And a little break before we get to the knockout round. Also, the Stanley Cup Final Four continues, both series squared at two games apiece. We'll take you to Amalie Arena tonight at 6. And the Blue Jays. Yeah, they get back on the good foot after an ugly run against the Red Sox. It is the Eric Francis Show. The man on the phone line is Eric Francis. Good Monday morning, Eric. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic, my man. How was your weekend? Happy Father's Day.
Well, thank you. Yourself as well. Had a great weekend. Little Father's Day brunch yesterday at an establishment that you know well, actually. Played Kananaskis Saturday. And really no complaints. Just a great weekend all around. Feeling spoiled and lucky and loving life here as we've got a nice little run. We're almost at the end of June here. This is going quick.
Yeah, life is good. I did something unique. I feel... And you correct me if I'm wrong. I feel it was uniquely Albertan that I wanted to just do something different and fun with my family. We're always searching for, you know, different adventures. I took them to the Calgary Firearms Center down in DeWinton there where Brian Burke does his, it's trap shooting and you go and you... I have a blast at that event every year because it is very unique. And I thought, you know what, I think my kids would enjoy not shooting a real gun, but, you know... doing some trap shooting. And so they loved it. My wife got a kick out of it too. And I just feel like that probably wouldn't have happened if I lived in Ontario. I'm just saying that. I don't know that to be true, but it felt like a uniquely Albertan experience to me. And I loved every minute of it.
Man, I was fortunate enough to be invited once to that event a couple of years ago. I had a blast. I could not believe how much fun that was. And the instructors there were incredibly helpful. Safety is always top priority, but also just how much fun you can have out there. I was really impressed. I did not expect to have the blast that I had. I expected a good time. It was a great time.
Yeah, I agree. And it was funny because earlier in the morning, I had a different sort of shot. My wife and I went and got our second vaccine shot done at the convention center. And as opposed to the first time when we went, where it was about an hour, which was still very well done and brilliantly executed by all the people involved, we walked right in, and within 5 minutes of us parking our car, we were getting a needle in our arm. Like it was, and I guess it had to do with supply. Their supply is low, so they weren't taking a lot of bookings on the weekend. But starting Tuesday, they'll have a massive new supply, and the lineups probably be back. But anyway, again, hats off to everybody, who's at the convention center and all these pharmacies doing all this great work. And it's an interesting experience to get that second shot and just. I know it doesn't make you bulletproof, but it sure makes you feel a whole lot better about life moving forward when you get that second one.
Well, you know what? I was lucky enough to get my second dose on, I believe, Thursday. I was totally fine, nothing at all except that little sore arm, which will happen. And for other people, a different experience. But I think it's important that we remind people that vaccines are effective when more people take them, not less. So if you are obviously in and getting vaccines, that's great. But if you can get someone to go get their shot that hasn't yet, that's the way you can pull the rope in the right direction now. And already some news that beyond July 5, people that are fully vaccinated upon returning to Canada from the U.S. via air travel won't have to quarantine the full 14 days. They just have to wait till their first negative test comes through upon arrival. So it feels like we're healing. We talked with Tommy earlier today about Euro, and also, you know, I think the reality that we will have some games back at Spruce Meadows this year for Calgary FC. This is all part of the process, so go out there and get your shot, folks.
Awesome. Yeah, I was up at Sylvan Lake where they had that opening game for the Sylvan Lake Gulls on the weekend. And that's,
how was that?
That's, you know, again, progress, right? We're just making progress. And I have very strong opinions on couples that wear matching anything like, and my wife, but she went and I guess Haley Wickenheiser and several, you know, prominent Canadians have really thrown their name behind that. Give it a shot. I think it's called. and she ordered T-shirts, matching T-shirts for us, and we wore them to get our shots. And you know, and it's all in, with an eye on, you know, the proceeds from the T-shirt sales go to Kids Help Phone, which is a great initiative, of course, mental health for youngsters. And of course, you're also promoting the fact that we got to get these shots. So I'm glad you brought that up, because it is important that we trumpet the virtues of getting the vaccine. I'm not a doctor, neither are you, but it sure seems to make a lot of sense to me.
Yes, the people that know more than we do are all suggesting this is a very good thing to do. So that is a good thing to remember. Okay, 9:12 is the time. Lots to get into. You want to start with golf's third major of the season, the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines. And San Diego was already John Rahm's happy place. He got his first career win there. He proposed to his wife there. After yesterday, I don't know that you're going to get him to leave. I feel like there's a new home base for John Rahm.
I laughed about that. He did say that. Like, it also reminds him of the cliffs of Spain, too, to some degree, and the weather. Sure. I wouldn't be surprised if he took up residence there pretty soon. And turns out he could probably afford it, especially after what happened yesterday. Cool story. And, you know, for Father's Day every year, it's always the U.S. Open Sunday is Father's Day every year. And I covered, I don't know, 5 or 6 U.S. Opens over the years. I always remember how many years they would sing happy birthday to Phil Mickelson every green he would get to, because it's also right in around his birthday here. So, but he never won the U.S. Open, 6-time runner-up, which is an amazing stat in itself. But the last U.S. Open I covered was 13 years ago at Torrey Pines, when famously people remember Tiger Woods limping around, beating Rocco Mediate in an 18-hole playoff. And I always laugh, like when John Rahm was making that putt on 18, and it was a different putt than Tiger had, but if people remember that tournament, Tiger had to make a 15-footer, and the story that year, 13 years ago, was how spiked up the greens were for whatever reason. I guess it was a little bit wet, and the greens by the end of every day were just chewed up, so you never knew if you were going to get a true bounce or not, or, you know, true roll. He's got a 15-footer, and he has to make it to send it into a playoff the next day. And, you know, true to Tiger's form, he obviously rolled it right in and absolutely screwed me in the process. At every major, they have a draw for the media to get in and try to play the course the next day. And they only let in like 16, 20 people. And I finally won after about, I don't know, a dozen majors. I finally won that draw. And I spent that day changing my flights. I went and bought shoes at the pro shop, you know, getting left-handed rentals, because I wasn't planning on playing out there. Getting left-handed rentals in the States is not as easy as it is in Canada. And I, you know, as I'm covering the tournament, I'm also scrambling around to try and get this perfect day of mine set up. And then Tiger rolls that in and all bets are off, because it's an 18-hole playoff the next day and the media don't get to play the course. So I know Tiger didn't do that to me on purpose.
What was that like? Like, because I got to be honest, I don't remember that. But that you mentioned it twice now, like a full round playoff. That's not what we're used to in this sport.
Yeah, and it's interesting because they just happened to mention yesterday that if there's a tie, it goes to a 2-hole aggregate, and the U.S. Open at some point recently must have changed that, because, as I said, it used to be a full 18 holes. You think about the logistical nightmare that is. For everyone involved, for the course, for spectators, for the city, for players, everyone's got flights booked out of there. You know, like, so, I mean, hey, obviously you get it. If you get into a playoff, you'll happily cancel your flight to wherever you're going next. But that was an amazing experience too, that 18-hole playoff, because as I recall, and I should have Googled it, but as I recall, Rocco was leading at one point in the 18-hole playoff, and Tiger had to mount a bit of a comeback in that one as well. And of course, nobody would have thought over 18 holes that Rocco Mediate could give Tiger a run for his money. And that's what made it just such an incredible story. And this much I know for sure, it wasn't just an 18-hole playoff. I think they went 3 extra holes after that. It went to sudden death after that. So that's how good a battle that it was between Rocco Mediate. And I love talking to Rocco when he comes to Calgary every year for the seniors swing. But I walked around for about 4 holes with Tiger's mom and his wife. Not It's not like we were talking, having great conversation, but there were a couple things exchanged. We were talking about a couple things, and I thought that was a bizarre experience to be walking right next to them and having a little bit of a chat with them as they were, you know, their hearts were in their throats, just watching Tiger go through this incredible battle. But fond memories of that. And then, of course, like a couple days later, we find out that he needs major reconstructive knee surgery. We knew his knee was bad, but we didn't know it was that bad. That'll go down in history as one of the greatest, you know, one of the greatest golf stories, I think. Not my story, but Tiger's story and how he endured despite having a busted up knee. Incredible drama.
So Rom moves to, I think, what, number one or two in the world now with that. Where is he on your hierarchy of greats right now? Because it was quite a leaderboard yesterday at one point. DJ was there. Rory McIlroy was there. Brooks and Bryce and the big rivalry, that was going on. I mean, there was no shortage of big names. The youngster Colin Morikawa was there. Oosthuizen at a major is not surprising anyone, and maybe not the conversation of that we're having. But I don't know that there was a better final round shaping up than the leaderboard we had midday.
I agree. And right around when they were making the turn, the leaders were making the turn. So that back nine is when everything just went to hell for a lot of people. And I don't think so much for most of the guys it was because of choking. I mean, that's just notoriously one of the tougher courses out there. I guess to be a little more precise, not Torrey Pines in general, which of course is always a good test, but you know, U.S. Open, the way it was set up with that rough and so many things kind of evolved or devolved as that thing came down the stretch. Like one of them was, so to your point, I think at one point Mackenzie Hughes was tied for third, like, you know, one stroke back, but the six guys, you know, right there with him, all ahead of him, I think all of them had won a major before. I don't think Rom was right there quite yet. He kind of surged up in the last little while. But anyway, an amazing series of dramas. And, you know, one thing that was interesting to me is DeChambeau. I know he considers himself a bit of a trailblazer because he's trying to play golf in a different way than anybody else has ever really done it successfully. And it worked last year at the U.S. Open. But I think we saw very graphically why nobody tries to play it that way, right? If you just bomb it, even when it's ill-advised to bomb it, eventually the game is going to get catch up to you. And boy, did it catch him yesterday in dramatic fashion. Like last I saw, he was 8 over par with a couple holes, 8 over par in the last, in the back nine, and he still had a couple holes to go. It just reminds you that, you know, what he's doing is so against the grain and so counterintuitive to what most golfers, you know, try to play the game. It can work, yeah, but I think it'll be a rarity when it does work as opposed to the norm, and we certainly saw that. And then there's poor Mackenzie Hughes. I think, you know, I'd be interested to hear what Adam Stanley said earlier, and I know we're going to replay it at the end of the hour here, but it was pretty obvious, and I don't think it surprises anyone, that he was overwhelmed by the moment. You could sit there and talk about the unluckiness of having your ball stuck in a tree, and don't get me wrong, incredibly unlucky, but he was clearly going to bogey that hole anyway. It was such a horrific shot that he had. He was going to bogey it or double bogey it anyway. And that trauma certainly didn't help him. But it just seemed to me that he was stunned by the occasion. Did you get that sense, or did Adam suggest that as well?
Well, it was the first time he was in a final group in a major on Sunday.
Of course.
I think, to your point, that's not a spot he looked comfy. But also, you'd noted it earlier, it's the back nine of a U.S. Open on the final day. Like, Rory blew up. DeChambeau blew up. A lot of the world's best blew up. Like, Bryson was leading at nine. So it didn't go well for Mackenzie Hughes. It was a learning moment and all that. But there was seven or eight world-class players within two or three strokes of victory yesterday. And all but one blew up. And that guy won it.
Yeah, amazing. It was survival of the fittest kind of thing. And, you know, Mackenzie will, you know, I don't know if we're going to see him again in a spotlight like that. But you can just tell, literally, when they're interviewing him at the end of the third round, like, he doesn't have any logos on his shirt, right? That tells you a lot about his standing in the golf world, right? This was an incredible breakthrough for him. I dare say, and I don't know how many Canadians were in the field this week. But I dare say that if you ranked all the Canadians in the field this week in terms of having a chance to win, he would have been dead last, right? There's no way that anyone would have suggested.
He's going to play for Canada at the Olympics this summer with Corey Connors. On merit, he's the second best Canadian in the game right now. He's had a really strong year. He's won on the tour before. Hadwin's a couple years removed from his victory at the Valspar. Pender's had a wonderful year, but he's been playing Korn Ferry, not a lot of PGA. So I think that's a little too strong, but Corey Connors is in another level. Corey Connors has been hanging back-to-back. He's been stringing together top 20s and top 10s like crazy this year. He's been by a mile the best Canadian. There's just been a big gap between him and Hughes.
And I would argue still that he's the lowest ranked of those four Canadians going into that thing, because at least Hadwin's been there a lot more than Hughes has. Hadwin's had some success, and I know he hasn't had a great season.
I think Hughes has two career victories to Hadwin's one, to be honest, but okay.
I would guarantee you Hadwin's made a ton more money than Mackenzie Hughes. But anyway, we could look that up. And Corey Connors, is a mile ahead of everybody else. And when we asked Adam last week for some long shots, he named Tyler Pendrith. He named Pendrith ahead of those other guys because he's such a bomber, right? I've played with Pendrith before. That guy hits it a country mile.
It's crazy.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, it's just a great story that Canadians, left, right, center. It almost seems like it's a new one, right? I mean, the average Canadian golf viewer was probably, would have been shocked that Mackenzie Hughes was right there on the way. I think Mackenzie Hughes must have been shocked that he was right there at a major on the final Sunday. It's a tremendous feather in his cap, and he can look around, and his handlers will look at him and talk to him and say, hey, everybody blew up except for one guy. Don't worry about it. It's not like you choked. Everybody else just, the course won on this day with a lot of them. And, man, getting your ball stuck up in a tree. if anything, this is a guy who will be remembered around the golf world for that up until, maybe he has more success. I mean, that was an incredibly unfortunate bounce off of a cart path. I mean, who sees that? I mean, I've never heard of that before in my life. It's incredible.
Yeah, and hey, look, here's the state of Canadian golf. There's four guys in this major. I think there was four in the Masters. We have 7, 8, 9 in regular PGA events. It's a really good time for Canadian golf. Good to see another Maple Leaf on the leaderboard, just not the finish that Mackenzie Hughes wanted, to be sure. He finishes the tournament ranked 71st in FedEx Cup point standings. Connors is 27th, Hadwin 105, and there's a bunch after that, like Nick Taylor, Gligich, on and on it goes. There's a bunch. There's 7 or 8 guys that are real regulars, and Taylor Pendrith will be one of those guys next year due to his standing on Korn Ferry this year. Fun times for the sport in this country. We just need to get our national tournament back. It's 2 years now without a Canadian Open.
I know. That's a shame, but hopefully it'll come back, and hopefully it'll be out west at some point. I'm going to play Mickelson National in a couple hours here, and it's it was built with an eye on hopefully hosting the Canadian Open one day, and I think now that that course is done and people have played it, it's lived up to the hype. And, I don't know where it is. I'll be looking forward to talking to Barry Elliott real soon here about where that's at. Maybe we'll have him on the show real soon here to just talk to him about that. At some point, I would love to have that national championship. I'd love to have Calgarians. Hey, we've earned it. Like, this city has earned it with the way we have supported, that seniors tournament. It is incredible, and this city is golf nuts. We've covered that a million times, and we would certainly support it in a big, big way. And that tournament, that host venue could be spectacular, I think, with a couple more years of maturation. I think it's got to be on the short list. It really does.
We'll see. Yeah, and that's a good topic also for Adam Stanley next week, but we should get Barry on. That's a good conversation as well. I think two things have to happen. You got to have a course that's difficult enough and that wants to host, and I think we've got that now. And secondly, you need to have the appetite of your huge sponsor that's putting up millions and millions of dollars in, the purse, but also everything else that gets involved with throwing your name on it, and they got to want to do it. And I don't think I need to ask you to pull out Google to find where Royal Bank's head offices are. Yeah. There's a real correlation between where that tournament's played and proximity to the big tower there.
Well, and I get it. Also, the population's there, right? I mean, that's where all the big clients are, and that's where all the big sponsors are. I totally get it. But, you know, they've shown in the past that they're willing to venture out and try some other things, but they haven't ventured out west here in a big way to where we want it to be right out here. So, yeah, no. It's certainly an interesting discussion. I think they've already named the next two or three four venues. They're quite ahead of the game there. So,
well, they lost two, right? They lost two to the pandemic, so they rescheduled quite a bit ahead. So it's not happening in the next 3-4 years. I'll guarantee that. Anyway, that's a conversation for another day. We'll line some of those chats up for later in the summer. We'll take a break. We'll come back with a thought on the Stanley Cup's Final Four, Eric, as we have two teams that I think we expected would be there and two that, how did these guys end up here? And is there anything that the Flames or other teams can learn or glean from the plucky underdog 6 wins away from a Stanley Cup? That's when we come back on the Eric Francis Show for our good friends at Horse Racing Alberta. Exciting times indeed as we are returning closer to normalcy as Horse Racing Alberta is proud to announce live horse racing back Tuesdays and Sundays at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Limited fan access is available, and you can still watch from home. HPIBet.com, HPIBET.com. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Back to the 9 with Ryan Pinder. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Eric Francis Show is brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. Live horse racing is back on Tuesdays and Sundays. Limited fan access is available, and you can still watch from home. For more info on how to get in on the action, visit HPIBet.com.
Welcome back to the Eric Francis Show on your Monday. As always, a reminder, our broadcast to come to you live from the iconic Electric and Controls downtown studios. Diversity, it's iconic. Contact them today at iconicec.ca. Eric, Final Four, four games in each series, and deadlocked at twos. No routes yet. At best, someone will win in six, and maybe, just maybe, we'll get treated to a pair of game sevens. What have you thought so far of the Final Four?
It's been fantastic drama, right? I mean, I think in both cases, the hockey world's got to be a little surprised that both series are tied at two. And in a lot of cases, a lot of people got to be surprised, shockingly, that Vegas is tied at two. They should have probably been down 3-1 after last night. They were not the better team last night. The difference maker in the game, other than obviously the overtime winner, was Robin Lehner. And boy, I'll ask you point blank, would you have made that move? Would you have pulled Fleury? I mean, I know he made a major gap that cost him the game, but Fleury's been incredible. And to go over to Robin Lehner, who hadn't played since game one of round two, and he lost 7-1. That was his last start, 7-1 shellacking against Colorado. And you're going to go to him in the biggest game of the year? It paid off, and it was the right call. I don't know if I would have made that call. What do you think?
Yeah, I wouldn't suggest either of us are qualified to make that call, but it looks like the right call. And I think it was the right call in game one of round two as well, because you saw how good Fleury looked coming back. And fatigue had played a role in a seven-game series against the Wild, a long and physical series, and one where Marc-Andre Fleury and Robin Lehner alternated games for 20-plus games in a row, like literally back and forth, no matter the result, back and forth, and all of a sudden, Marc-Andre Fleury was playing every game. So I don't know necessarily that this is DeBoer thinking that Lehner gives him the best chance to win so much as he knows he's going to get a better Fleury as a result of more rest. That's how I sort of viewed it. And through that lens, it does make some sense.
So, who do you start next game?
Well, and that's what I asked this morning. And it's a really interesting conversation. I don't know the answer, but I think where we both arrived, Boomer and I, was probably doesn't matter, does it? They're going to be getting great goaltending from both these guys.
Yeah. I'm going with Lehner. And it doesn't mean Fleury's lost his job or anything, because they've proven conclusively over the last year for sure anyway, that they're happy and confident going with either guy. And you know what? Like, you know, Pete DeBoer, of course, looks like a genius for making the move last night. But when you really think about it, I mean, this is something that everyone should be giving endless praise to the general manager for. Everybody thought that they were going to have to, or that they should trade probably Fleury last offseason, because it was just an embarrassment of riches And probably Fleury's a little too old and probably he's not going to be that good anymore. You know, obviously Leonard was a starter going into this season in everybody's mind. And I think the organization's too. But, you know, Fleury has rewarded them with an incredible season, an incredible playoff. And now they have both guys. And the GM said very strongly, right, you know, at the beginning of the offseason last year, we're not trading either one of those guys. I know everyone in the world thinks we should or need to, but this is one of the biggest strengths of our organization. And boy, right when they needed it the most in their season last night, it came true. So I'd start Leonard again, but it's a fun debate, and we'll see what the board does. I think giving Fleury even more rest can't be a bad thing. If Leonard loses this game, this next game, then you go back with Fleury and the one after that. But what an incredible series. The lone goal that was scored on Leonard yesterday was an absolute, like, it was a perfect shot by Paul Byron. And I just wonder, whenever you see Byron score, and he scored some key ones through this little run that they're, not little run, but this impressive run Montreal's had, is everybody in Calgary saying the exact same thing that I do, which is, oh boy, Flames easily could still have him?
Well, we know they could have. The question is, why at the time was that considered? Like, I remember pulling my hair out screaming about that, and people are like, this doesn't matter. This is not a good player. And it was like, no. A guy that gets a lot of breakaways is a guy you keep, whether he's scoring on them or not. Create high-danger chances. Keep that guy. But they were worried about losing Yoni Ortio on waivers. You had a roster spot being up, but with, you know, eaten up by the likes of Brandon Bolig. It was a bad decision at the time. And the people that didn't have a problem with then do now, I wonder what's different. He's the same guy. He's just a little more experienced. Oh, yeah. Like this move was not criticized as much then as people like to pretend it was now.
Yeah, I think the reaction at the time, I know certainly my reaction was, oh, I just felt bad for Byron because he really wanted to be here. I remember the morning that it happened and he came into the Dome and there were tears as he said goodbye to his teammates. I mean, he really loved Calgary and felt that they had really given him an opportunity. And, you know, hey, he's made the most of it. It's a great story. You know, I just wonder when I see stuff like that too, though, you know, does that, you know, and the same thing happened with Marty St. Louis in a different way. Don't get me wrong, but, you know, these small, talented players, and the Flames have several of them in their organization. And, you know, Matthew Phillips comes to mind. And I don't think many people inside the organization think that he's really ever going to be an NHLer. But, you know, when you see these things happen repeatedly and you look around the league and you see more and more and more of these small guys making an impact, does it, you know, it's got to make you pause and wonder if maybe we got to give this guy more of a chance, whether it's Matthew Phillips or Andrew Mangiapane's case, that's paid off. He's not quite as small as these other guys that we're talking about, but, you know, it seems to be the way that it's going right now. If a guy's got sublime talent, yet he's undersized, you know, should you be giving him a little bit more rope than some organizations do for these guys? I don't know. I kept thinking about Matthew Phillips last night after I saw that. Different player, I get it, but I'm just saying, same sort of template, as the Flames make their moves this year, it's not like they're going to make moves in and around Matthew Phillips, but I just wonder if, you know, when camp comes, if they give him a little bit more of a look. I don't think so, but, you know, it makes you wonder.
Kucherov and Point leading the playoffs in scoring. I feel like it's kind of been a nice little destruction of the narrative that little guys can't play this time of year. Those aren't big humans. They're great players. They're difference makers when it matters the most. I look at the postseason that Gallagher's had. You look at Jean-Gabriel Pageau, the role he's played. I mean, it's still a thing, man. It really is. As silly as it sounds, there is still a very real bias against size, which, you know, I guess if you can exploit it, great. But if you're part of it, like, you're just ignoring data. Like, Dustin Wolf's not available in round 7 if he's 6'2". It's just that simple.
No. And, you know, he's a guy who I think we're all fascinated to see how he continues to develop, right? I mean, especially next year when he's playing against pros, it's going to be fascinating to see, you know, how that frame holds up, you know, against stronger players, the harder shots, you know, better shots. Anyway, that play by Paul Byron, you know, everyone talks about the shot to finish the play and to put them up 1-0 in a game they probably should have won based on that goal. That taking that, corralling that pass off of both skates and onto his stick while in full stride, you know, again, you can't teach that. Guys just either have that or they don't. And these sublimely skilled young, small guys seem to have that. Like, I bet Matthew Phillips could make that sort of play. Whereas many guys much bigger couldn't, not because of their size, but they just don't have the stick handling abilities. Anyway, I just know that most Flames fans, when Paul Byron scores a big goal, they don't think about the circumstances under which he left Calgary. In fact, most people probably can't remember how or why he left, whether he was traded, was he claimed on waivers. All they think about is, oh, we could still have him, which of course they still could. But anyway, it's just funny how our mind always goes to that.
Enjoy the week. We'll do it again next week. Enjoy Mickelson today. That'll be fun.
Thanks, my man. Enjoy your week. Look forward to chatting next week and hearing what Adam Stanley has to say here.
Yeah, for sure. Love it. Good stuff. And we got to get out on the track before the end of the season. All of a sudden, almost July. All the best. We'll do it again next Monday. Thanks, Eric.
See you, my man. Cheers.
Okay, there's Eric Francis. He and many others do join us on the guest hotline for Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar. Make it a great night. Choose from pizza and wings, pasta and seafood, or steak and ribs. Order now through DoorDash or dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast, Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar. We're coming back with Adam Stanley, his thoughts on the U.S. Open, John Rahm's win, and what happened to Mackenzie Hughes. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
In the Nissan Murano, you're always at the top of your game. With a comfortable cabin and available Bose premium sound, it'll feel like you've got the best seats in the house. And now, at the Big Thrill sales event, the Murano is more exciting than ever. Right now, get up to $4,000 standard rate finance cash on select models. Don't wait. The Big Thrill sales event ends June 30th. Visit Nissan.ca or contact your local Nissan dealer. Conditions apply.
Well, Calgary, we're not back to normal yet, but with everyone's hard work, we're headed in the right direction. Treat yourself to some home relaxation and you time with Paradise Bay Hot Tubs. They have an awesome selection of hot tubs, swim spas, and more because don't you deserve to be pampered? Visit them online to view their inventory and stock up on supplies with contact-free delivery still available. Life is better in a Paradise Bay Hot Tub at the corner of Deerfoot and Glenmore or at GoParadiseBay.com.
Hey, hey, this is Auto Value's Car Chat. Carl.
Jimmy, I don't even know where to begin. My car needs help. Advice?
Carl, you've come to the right place. At Auto Value, we recommend checking your lights, filters, and hoses, plus changing your oil and topping up all your fluids. Auto Value has all the parts you need and advice to get the job done.
Wow, you guys are miracle workers. I've got a bit of a beer belly, too. Can you fix that?
Oh, brother. Till next time, stay classy, Alberta.
Boomer in the Morning. Weekday mornings with Ryan Pinder. The boys talk sports, food, life, and everything else. Lots of ways to listen. On the radio, of course, or online at sportsnet.ca/960. Stream the guys through the Sportsnet or Radio Player Canada app, too. Text the show anytime at 960-960. Normal data rates may apply. Brought to you by Sunbury Golf Club. Voted the number one value course in Alberta by Score Golf 4 years in a row. Now open. Book your tee time at SunburyGolf.com. Boomer in the Morning, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hey, it's your Ford vehicle here. Tough year, I know, but summer's here. Time for us to hit the road. But I could use a little Ford service time first. You know, some expert hands going over my body, checking under the hood. Yeah, I'm talking the works, baby.
Get your Ford ready with the Works Service Package, including oil and filter change, vehicle report card, 83.
The 9 with Ryan Pinder continues on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
9:46, no Pinder report to get you to Rintoul and Sermon. Instead, a conversation from earlier this morning with Adam Stanley in the wake of the U.S. Open. John Rahm finally victorious at a major and a high-pressure spot for one Canadian on Sunday that probably he'll be better for moving forward. That in a moment, and a reminder that we will have playoff hockey on your radio tonight. It'll be game number 5 from Amalie Arena in Tampa. We'll take you there at 6 o'clock. It's also on Sportsnet West and CBC. Winner tonight will have a chance to wrap it at Nassau Coliseum in 3 days. That would be quite an opportunity, would it not? All that, and Scott, I should say, Rintoul and Sermon, going to have Craig Forrest on, lots of Euro talk as well. Pair of matches at 10, another pair at 1. Very excited to watch the Dutch this morning. That'll be piling on against the Northern Macedonians. Okay, let's go. Sure, yeah. But right now, it is Adam Stanley from earlier this morning.
Adam Stanley joins us. He is our golf insider. Adam, thanks for doing this morning, man. I'm finding it hard not to feel pretty good for John Rahm between you see him with all of his family. He's got the new baby proposed on the golf course to his wife who is there. How don't you feel good for this guy getting it done yesterday with all he's had go on in the last 6 weeks?
Yeah, I don't even know really if it's a redemption story, just as much of a karma cosmic alignment kind of story. At Torrey Pines, like you had said before I jumped on here about Rahm, of course, testing positive for COVID. The PGA Tour's protocols are pretty strict in that regard. So, he gets taken off the golf course. He has to enter tracing protocols, doesn't swing a club for 10 days. He actually said yesterday, though, that forced break, actually was a bit of a treat for him. He doesn't really slow down at all during the summertime. So to be able to kind of just hang out, chill, do nothing, don't have to worry about much was actually for his benefit. He had no business making those two putts on 17 and 18 yesterday, a couple of tricky sliders with some aggressive fist pumps afterwards. They were not easy, that's for sure, but he ends up coming away with the victory, with his kid there, his wife, three generations of his family, all good stuff.
I guess the only thing that would have made it better is if he's in the final group, right? Nails that putt and then manages to get the winning putt on 18 with everything on the line. Had to wait for it a little bit, but you're right. Ryan, you had said it earlier. It kind of had, and I know everybody kind of compares it to Tiger, and it's kind of an exhausted kind of a narrative, but
You got to, though.
The guy's wearing red. Those two putts, 17 and 18 on Sunday with everything on the line.
Fist pumps.
It was very Tiger-esque, wasn't it?
The fist pumps as well, yes. It was very Tiger-esque. Torrey Pines, I mean, this is where Tiger won the U.S. Open on one leg. Here we are 15, 18 years later, and he's still on one leg, I guess, after the car accident from earlier this year. But, yeah, I mean, John Rahm, this was inevitable. John Rahm was always going to win a major. Golf is the most unpredictable of games, but there are few sure things in the sport. This John Rahm winning a major was certainly one of them. Moves back to number one in the world, and just it was too good to be true until it was true. And you're right. Had this been a final group on Sunday situation, it would have been unbelievable drama, just too crazy to even think that it happened when it did. But we had to sit and we waited. And then when Louis Oosthuizen kind of screwed up a little bit at the end there, it was John Rahm's major. So good for him. I mean, he was a fabulous, talker in the media room afterwards and just such a great golfer and a great person. And this was a great win.
So for Louis, second place is rather familiar in majors. He's got one to his name, the first place, and what, almost two slams of second place? A poor guy.
Six runner-up finishes in his career now.
Oh, my goodness. Like, what are your thoughts when you watch him coming down the stretch knowing what we knew, which was that was his history?
Well, it was ridiculous that he blew it into the hazard, into the penalty area on 17. I mean, this guy has the sweetest swing of anybody on the PGA Tour. And I guess it just goes to show you that sort of nerves and the moment can take over anybody. And that includes somebody who's got the nicest swing on the PGA Tour. So tough to see from Louis there in the penalty area on the 71st hole. And then, of course, he didn't even hit a nice tee shot either on the 72nd hole either. Had to kind of punch out, and then that was what was left, the 70-yard pitch that he needed to dunk for an eagle to try to get tied with John Rahm. So what do we know about Louis? A fabulous golf swing, a nice career that a lot of people would look back and say that they wish they would have had too, but a lot of near misses as well.
Yeah, fair enough. And the Canadian story heading in was the big one. Mackenzie Hughes had the lead after 54 holes, his first final group at a major on Sunday. At least he can look back and say he's learned, I guess.
And he hit a ball in a tree.
That's what you don't want to do, right? So the lesson is don't hit your ball in a tree.
You do not want to hit a ball in a tree. It was pretty wild. I mean, Mackenzie Hughes, you got a feel for the guy. Final group on Sunday at a major, his first time doing that, ends up really getting out of the gates poorly. And that's like any sport. That's like anybody, even on the PGA Tour. If you're going to go 3 over par through your first 6 holes, you know, you kind of have an inkling that it's not going to be your day. The thing is, Mackenzie still had a chance. I mean, he was only a shot or two back making the turn. Then, of course, he hits the ball in the tree and he's, you know, all kinds of messed up. And then he tries to press a little bit, which he can't do at a U.S. Open, and he just stumbles into the finish line. But, you know, had this been Brooke Henderson or even Corey Connor, somebody like that, and they were in the final group on Sunday at a major and they dropped way down, you'd think that it was a disappointment. But Mackenzie Hughes came into the week off 5 missed cuts in a row. His best finish at a major was tied for 40th. I mean, this dude was just kind of living in the moment, trying to take it a round at a time, a shot at a time. And this, you know, we kind of say, well, at least he learned something. For Mackenzie Hughes, 100% he learned something. And I think that this was a big time positive for him. And now he gets to get into this position another time in the future, feeling a lot better about himself and his approach to things.
Thoughts on Bryson versus Brooks? It was Bryson that had the advantage until, what, the back nine when he completely unraveled. Just an ugly back nine for the scientist.
Bryson was leading this tournament through 9 holes. When he made the turn, he was leading the U.S. Open. And then, of course, shoots his worst 9-hole score in his career, coming in at 44, I think. He was well over par for the back nine. And it was just like, it was weird. It was weird to see the implosion from Bryson because, you know, his approach to the U.S. Open, for anyone who kind of feels like, well, you know, this is ridiculous. It may be ridiculous, but it's working clearly. I mean, it was working until it wasn't, I guess, is the better way of describing it. But weird to see him play as poorly as he did for the final 9 holes. I think he was just kind of mentally distracted. There was the streaker on the one hole that came ripping past him. And then he just was playing totally ugly golf. And then Brooks ends up topping him by the time the leaderboard is all said and done. So I don't think that rivalry is going away anytime soon. It's fun for the sport. People were so tucked into it all week long, and certainly all of yesterday when there was a chance that maybe there would be a playoff to win this thing between those two guys. So all in all, good for the sport, but bad 9 holes for Bryson.
So just a quick, sorry, I was just going to say a quick question. Now, was it a streaker? Because it looked like there was some mode of clothing, whether it was a flag or something. Because I feel like a fan took to the, you know, was on the fairway. But if you were going to be a streaker, I mean, have some guts, right? Like, strip down and do this thing. Own it, right?
You're right. I think it was more of I think the upper body was uncovered. Lower body, I think, was covered, plus a little flag. And he brought a club and some golf balls, and he was hitting balls in the fairway. So you're right. I'm not a streaker, I guess, is perhaps a poor way of describing it, as much of an unruly fan.
That's,
I think,
right.
The language they landed on.
He had a smooth swing. I was pretty impressed. Pretty all that good. Pressure. He knows the police are coming. People are screaming. He's on national television. And then really smooth, steady, good pacing. I was impressed. Nice couple of wedges.
It was good action. It was.
Yeah. But again, it tells you the condition of the course, right? That's we could all do that if we stripped down to our skivvies and went to one of these great courses, right? Thanks, man. It was again, I don't know where you're falling on DeChambeau, but I loved watching that shank. I don't know why. I loved it. It was spectacular, is right. And the box of beer, again, fancy people. Stella Artois, like, it's not some Stella. Old Milwaukee, right? I mean, it's a highbrow crew at the U.S. Open. I don't know what is going on with fans in sports now that COVID is kind of loosing. We've seen
how the NBA fans are
dumping popcorn and throwing stuff and spitting on people putting on, taking their clothes off and hitting golf balls at Torrey Pines. I don't know what's happening. Losing our minds.
We've been saving up all this energy for the last year and a half. Now we're just ready to unleash it.
Now, question for you, and I admit, the Olympic for the Canadian Olympic golf, we're going to hear about, is today the final day for qualifying? Today's kind of a day for that, right?
Yesterday was the final day of qualifying. If Adam Hadwin finished tied for third or better at the U.S. Open, he would have jumped into one of the spots. He did not, so the official announcement will come today, but Corey Connors and Mackenzie Hughes on the men's side will be the Olympic representation for Canada. On the women's side, That is still to be confirmed. I think it's this week.
Right. Good stuff, Adam. Appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for jumping in.
No worries, fellas. Thanks so much.